motherfuckers. Our kooky cavalcade of crazy cults continues with David Koresh and his wacky friends down in Waco. Tonight, Waco and the surrounding bullshit gets deep, fat, motherfucking fried, bitch!
Deep, fat, fried!
You know what, guys?
What? Hold on, TJ.
You know what, guys? Mother,
walk it back.
Hey, guys, listen, man.
You know what really grinds my gears?
You know what I'm... Hey, listen, Scotty. Fuck you. Listen. Listen, Paul.
Shh. Who let TJ into the meth closet?
The sound...
Listen.
...of TJ.
I did not do any research for this episode.
TJ, you suck.
Dude, TJ, you're fucking pitiful.
Oh my god.
I was fucking devoting all of my time to getting the metro.co.uk to write articles about my not liking the new Lara Croft's tits.
What a world we
Good
live
job.
In, man.
Thank you. You know, thank you guys. If you guys want to give me a quick round of applause or anything... No applause? Okay,
you're
that's
good.
Fine. I'm going to give myself a quick round of applause.
There you go. That's the sound of one hand clapping, TJ.
I can clap with one hand.
That's what I'm saying. That's what you get. You get half a clap. You get a fap clap.
You don't even get that.
You get the fap clap.
There you go.
The fap clap.
Oh, yeah.
My opinions on women's tits are so fucking important to this country that they get written up in news articles. I think that's important.
Wasn't it actually, you said co.uk, so another country, but...
Yeah.
I mean, let's not split hairs.
I'm a lot bigger overseas, you know how that goes.
I didn't know TJ was such a powerful member of the Titterati. Dude.
Yeah, dude.
I didn't know that, like, the world of titties looks to you.
And I'm not even a tit man, you know? I'm more of an ass guy, but you know what? Whatever, I like titties too.
You know what? I like the ass, but you know...
Someone in the chat said, wow, he's really milking this. Yes, I really am.
He really is.
Milking this, you know? Because titty! Wah! Yeah, I'm going to milk it.
Meanwhile, nobody will be milking the new Lara Croft because there's no udder there to milk.
Oh, you're going to jump into the fray, huh? Try to steal my thunder, huh, Paul Zigo?
Yeah.
Well, I see how it goes. All right.
So, TJ...
Scotty, you wanted to say some kind of thank you to some kind of faggots, Patreon or something?
I wanted to say it, TJ. You don't want to say it? You don't
no.
want to say that?
No, I don't.
Actually, you don't?
No.
Wow,
I actually, because I'm announcing the new We Aren't DFF campaign.
Oh, shit.
Wherein we don't give a fuck what our fans think, and then go fuck themselves.
We don't give a fuck, and we won't.
Hashtag We Aren't DFF.
Yes.
The movement we can all get behind.
The movement that we can all get behind.
Are really not. Actually, we don't want you behind it.
The movement
you can
that we don't even want you behind, but you can fuck if you want to. We don't give a shit.
But you know what? We actually want to thank all our fucking patrons. We've got a ton of patrons the last few days.
Yeah, thank you
we
guys.
We owe you guys your own episode, which TJ...
we actually owe them two episodes because they fucking signed up so quick.
I was going to say that, but we also owe them a Prohibition episode, so that's going to be planned. So plans for that are going to be announced soon.
Yep, stay tuned to your Patreon for more info on that. But yeah, we'll get you guys your... Thank you very much to all the new patrons and shit, and we hope that you enjoy.
Hey, Scotty, I just want you to know that your fucking friend, Umbrella Corp Security, is in the chat.
Oh my god, dude.
Just want you to know that.
Why would you even...
I mean, do I have to fucking do this episode now, TJ? You know, this is fucking... Dude, TJ, this is harassment on your part. You probably invited Umbrella Corp Security here just to fucking play this shit.
I think TJ is Umbrella Corp Security.
He probably fucking is, dude.
I think he's texting it, like, in a phone in his lap as he's pretending to do the show. And he's always, all along, been Umbrella Corp Security just to harass you, his better in every way.
Hashtag Patreon squad up in the motherfucking chat as well. All right, so thank you to our patrons. We got some special shit coming towards you guys because you guys met our fucking goals way faster than we ever imagined.
But, yeah, that was crazy.
We're not going to complain because we're greedy fucks, so.
Of course not, but yeah, still, you know, my capacity for astonishment.
Yeah, capacity. Yeah. All right, so today's topic is David Koresh, the Branch Davidians, Waco. I wasn't sure what name. I just settled on Waco because I figured that sounded the most
kind of sums
infamous.
It up. The Waco siege, you know, I mean, it's just a crazy fucking event, dude.
And Scotty, this was we pretty much gave this to you to research, so I'm just going to take my headphones off, kind of kick back and chill this episode.
Good, dude.
You just take on over. Now, I'll just pretend like I know what I'm doing, like usual. It's
that
fine.
Sounds good.
That's your everyday life.
Yes,
so.
That's what I'm saying.
I mean, so isn't that most people, though, granted?
I don't know.
I would say.
I'm not sure.
I would say most adults.
You got to fake it till you make it, you know what I mean?
You just kind of fucking
what if you just keep
life?
Faking it and then you die?
You got to deny it till you supply it, then.
All right.
Paul just has Paul's just had those trite
if the glove don't fit, you must acquit. All right.
Yep.
Let's get started.
Rock the fuck on. Okay.
Dude, so the Branch Davidians, dude, that's kind of where we're going to start with this one. Which is an offshoot of the Seventh-day Adventists. So,
now the Seventh-day Adventists, if I recall correctly, they were kind of like a UFO sort of cult a little bit.
There's a little bit of UFO theology.
I mean, there was like a big event in their religion where they said a UFO was going to destroy the earth or save the earth or some such nonsense.
Right. Now, it kind of ties together all of the, well, I guess not Jim Jones. He didn't really have a UFO theology, but the last two that we've covered.
Yeah, they did.
A little influenced by the UFOs, maybe.
I don't know. I don't think the Branch Davidians had too much to do with the UFO stuff, but
well, they're more the apocalypse. They kind of just David Koresh's big thing, as we're talking about more, is, you know, he was basically going to interpret the Book of Revelations, and he was going to make it clear to everyone when Revelation was going to happen, and either save everyone or prevent it.
Right.
So he's this figure that's basically going to come out. Either he's going to save everyone there, and they're all going to go to heaven. Or, you know, he's going to prevent the apocalypse.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, a pretty good deal either way, if you're him. But the Branch Davidians were an offshoot of them. It was called the Shepherd's Rod. This guy split off because he did the typical thing, which he challenged the elders, you know.
Give me the rod! Remember that?
That's a pretty obscure reference.
That's
DJ.
From
Dungeons and Dragons.
Dungeons and Dragons, the motion picture.
Which, that should be DFF. At some point, it's a terrible fucking movie with a lot of big name actors, surprisingly, but that's not the point. So of course this guy, his name is Victor Hotef. He goes to the, you know, the elders, and of course, you know, they deal with the established authority figures going to do. Nah, get out of here. You know, we don't want this shit. You're challenging the fucking belief system here, and we're not going to allow that, because why would you? Authority figures don't really allow that. They don't just say, yes, your beliefs are great. Take power from us and lead the group. That doesn't happen.
Right. So then he splinters off, creates his own shit.
Yeah, and actually, they settled near Waco in 1935. So, I mean, so, they
like,
were there for a while.
The Branch Davidians were kind of, they were an offshoot of an offshoot. I mean, if you go back far enough, I'm sure it's just offshoots and offshoots and offshoots.
Well, no, he dies, and then his wife, Florence, takes over.
Right.
And then she does the big no-no with religion, when she gives people a firm, specific date and when the end times are going to occur.
That's always a bad idea.
Bad idea. You gotta be vague.
Because then people
happen.
Think you're full of shit when January the 3rd comes and, you know, the earth's still spinning.
We all know 2012. Oh, yeah. I remember the entire year. I'm like, I can't wait for 2012 to be over because these people are holding on.
Florence said April 22nd, 1959 was the end of the world.
Yep, end of the world. So everyone just sell your shit, gather up. And people have heard the story before. I mean, maybe not specifically from this, but you've heard about the cult that goes
the crazy thing about that, it did lead to some splintering, like you guys are talking about, but I think the majority of people pretty much stuck with it. They're just like, because I think they immediately came out with some new bullshit story. They're just like, look, our fucking piety and faith was so great that they fucking decided to cancel that old apocalypse for a little while.
She disbanded her followers. So she said she was done, and she was like, she sold, basically.
But the Seventh-day Adventists, they're the ones who stayed in her camp, basically, even if she fucking left.
Well, it was at Mount Carmel. So she sold that off. She was done with it. Okay, but there's a guy named Ben Roden who basically took over and didn't. And actually, he was kind of in opposition to her at the time. So he wasn't really going, I mean, like, obviously he went along with it, but he had a different idea. And this is basically where it comes into the seventh, breaking away even further from the Seventh-day Adventists to now actually the Branch Davidians. So he's kind of like the founding figure of the, because like he was branching off.
Right.
He said that, you know, she was basically the dead rod, which is the shepherd's rod, and now the living branch is here.
Get off the dead rod and move to the living
branch.
Yeah,
so yet again, branching off yet again. So I said, like, they're an offshoot of an offshoot of another religion, which is another offshoot of another religion. So it just...
Christian people are fucking weird, yeah. Man. Can we just say that? Like, if somebody came to me and said, you know, this woman was the dead rod, but I am the living branch, I'd be like, fuck you, get away from me.
Lightning bolt.
It's like, ugh.
Yeah, it's kind of just weird. It's kind of creepy.
The type of shit that, like, will convince people that are religious-minded is just absurd. I'm the living branch. Now give me all your money and let me fuck all your women.
Okay, good.
Sounds good to me.
So how did David Koresh get in charge?
All right, so we're getting to that, dude. Like, it's a fucking doozy of a fucking day with these motherfuckers, dude. Okay, so Ben dies. Not that Ben. So Ben dies, and, you know, what happens next is then there's a kind of a power struggle because her son, George, and Lois, which is what's Ben's wife, they have a power struggle. They're fighting for the membership, who's going to be charged. I mean, ultimately, it's kind of like a shared thing. Lois is more, from what my reading, was more on top. But he kind of shifted her son to the heir apparent. Like, he's going to come, as soon as she's gone, he's going to take over, right?
Okay.
So, basically, at that point, I think, let me see this information I have. When Koresh actually comes in the picture. I believe it was 1985.
Cool, the year I was born.
So the year you were born, that's when David Koresh comes in the picture.
I guess this Lois bitch brought in a dude called Vernon Howell.
David Koresh.
Who took over this shit.
Well,
and then he fucking changed his name to David
Koresh. What happened was, it's alleged they had a relationship. She was in her 60s at the time, so she was fairly older.
So he maybe just said, hey, you want some young dick, and in exchange, I get control of your weird little cult after you die?
Well, he was basically in charge of the pulpit, which, you know, to church is pretty important, especially when,
it's
like
the
this.
Most important.
Yeah, so, I mean, he essentially was kind of groomed for that. But then, with George, the son, obviously, George wasn't just like, yeah, take over, that's fine with me. But actually, before we get in, because that's actually kind of getting into something I want to get into later. I kind of want to get more into David Koresh right now as a person, so you kind of understand him a little bit better before we jump in.
I know one thing about him. He's fucking dead sexy, dude. Look at him. Look at that beautiful face.
I mean, you know, he looks like a 90s folk artist or something.
He looks like Mirror Universe fucking Weird Al Yankovic.
Yeah. Weird Al, but attractive.
So he was born in 1959 in Houston.
Weird Edge Al.
So actually not far from here. His biological father was never around in his life, never really had that sort of, you know, father figure in his life. And his mom kind of bounced from guy to guy. It was the impression I got.
Cool.
So he claimed at the age of two to have been beaten to a pulp by his stepfather, which I don't know if he'd actually have memory permanence at that time. Probably not, but he claims...
Galen remembers the day he was born, Scotty.
No, he doesn't.
Yes, he does.
Yeah, no, he doesn't. So he kind of had, like... he definitely had kind of, like, this father... You kind of have a daddy issue in his life. You can kind of tell that, too.
No, he didn't.
Oh, he definitely did.
No, he didn't.
He didn't have anything like that.
Let's stick to the facts, Scotty, not your fucking idle speculation. Oh, he had daddy issues. You don't know. Are you a trained psychiatrist that sat down with David Koresh?
He was...
I don't think you are.
Well, he's dead, so...
I've sat down with him, and he told me...
You're a lying sack of shit, TJ.
He told me that he was a poor student, and he began intense Bible study when his grandmother started taking him to the Seventh-day Adventist church.
Oh, okay.
That's what he told me personally, Paul.
Oh, okay. You personally... Okay.
Yes.
Which, their big deal is they actually observed the Sabbath. Kind of like Jews. They observe the Sabbath.
Weird.
Yeah. So, like, what? To what extent, though?
Like, they observe it. Like, you're not supposed to do anything. Like you know, in the Bible, how Moses has the guy put to death for gathering sticks and stuff?
Yeah.
I don't think they kill people, but it's like, you're not supposed to do anything.
Like, but there are Jews that, like, go to an extreme where it's like, they think that, like, turning on a light bulb is working. So they have, like, these other ways of having the lights come on.
I remember when Lieberman was perhaps going to be vice president, which is gross to think about, but... There was that was a thing in the campaign, was like, what are you willing to do? Because he observes that shit, the Saturday thing. And he won't. He's one of those guys. He won't even turn on the light or nothing or answer the phone or any of that shit.
Damn.
So they were kind of like, well, what are you going to do if there's an emergency? He's like, well, I'll do it in an emergency. Don't worry. But
yeah, if it's life or death, they're allowed to break it to save themselves or somebody they love. But, outside of that, you can't do shit. Dude, I need to become a fucking Hasidic Jew immediately.
Yeah. Your Saturdays off forever. But you can't do anything with like technology or anything, though.
Just sleep.
And of course, just sleep all day.
So
sleepy day.
Another core tenet of the Seventh-day Adventist movement is they believe in the imminent second coming of Christ. So,
don't they all?
Well, I mean, like, kind of like within their lifetime, like they're gonna actually experience it.
I mean, these motherfuckers been around since like the 50s. So
saying it's imminent, it doesn't mean it's gonna happen eventually. I mean, imminent is like soon.
Well, I know, but I'm saying like they've been around since the 50s. So how long can you really get away with like any second now?
As long as stupid fucking people exist, I guess.
But obviously, that factors into the psychology here because he's kind of from a young age indoctrinating this kind of belief that this kind of stuff is going to happen soon, and then later on leads a cult. I mean. So it's not that much of a stretch as to where that seed was planted.
Yeah. Jeeb is coming back. If that fucking is drummed into your head as a child, you're going to probably...
Especially if one day the thought occurs to you, like, maybe I'm Jesus.
Yeah.
I could be the special one.
Apparently, when Koresh turned 12, his mother bought him a radio, and he started listening to evangelists on... the airwaves.
Oh, I bet there was some crazy shit, too,
and,
down south.
Texas, yeah.
It says he would listen and study how they proselytize. So he was really looking to them for, like, inspiration at that time. Like, this is how it's fucking done.
Oh, yeah.
Dissecting what these guys are doing. So maybe not a great student in school, but definitely able to learn when he really puts his mind to shit.
Yeah, was able to focus in on religion and learn the ins and outs of how to present it to people.
Here's how this hustle works. Oh, okay.
So the next kind of...
So, hey, that's a good question, because, when we looked at Jim Jones, he was kind of a... He didn't really believe the bullshit he was spewing.
No.
Marshall Applewhite, a little bit more, we kind of got more of a sense of like true believer. So where does this guy fall? You guys know more. You've been watching documentaries and shit. True believer or fucking con artist or
somewhere in
between?
Middle.
Yeah, I think that he really exploited his positions, especially sexually, as I'm sure we'll get into.
For sure, yes.
And, he like made the theology fit his weird sexual preferences and to serve his sexual appetite. So that clearly...
Well, if you think... Did he think he was Jesus or the second coming of Jesus?
That's a great question, and I don't know if anybody could tell you the answer to
no
that.
No way
honestly.
To really answer it, huh?
I mean, he's dead as fuck burnt.
He definitely had that complex. He definitely had the Masonic complex.
So, I mean, he definitely liked to think of himself that way, for sure, and portrayed himself that way to the people.
Yeah, it says here, and I guess this is kind of getting into sexual proclivities a little bit here.
Yeah.
When Koresh was 22, he had an affair with a 15-year-old girl who became pregnant. Pretty standard in Texas, though. He claimed to have become a born-again Christian in the Southern Baptist Church and soon joined his mother's church, the Seventh-day Adventist Church. There he fell in love with the pastor's daughter, and while praying for guidance, he opened his eyes and allegedly found the Bible open to Isaiah 34:16, stating that none should want for her mate. What does that mean?
Whatever he wants it to mean, so he gets to fuck a 15-year-old, I guess.
He wants to fuck
convinced
the pastor's
this
daughter.
Was a sign from God, he approached the pastor and told him God wanted him to have his daughter for a wife. The pastor threw him out, and when he continued to persist with his pursuit of the daughter, he was expelled from that congregation.
But he knocked her up anyway? Is that not the girl he knocked
up?
That's
a different one.
That's a different girl.
Yeah,
so he just had
girls.
Kind of a pattern of...
Yeah, he just, he went up to the pastor, he's like... Hey, preach.
I want to fuck your daughter.
Listen, this is going to sound weird, but the Bible just fuck. God just told me and your daughter, we got to fuck.
Look,
I got to be all up in that. Don't you worry.
It says it in the fucking Bible. A big theme about Koresh, especially the people that joined, the Branch Davidians, I mean, a lot of them joined because of David Koresh, and you could just tell. I'm saying that not. Like, people said, a lot of people describe themselves as not being religious, not really caring about the Bible, thinking the Bible was boring, it was not fun to read, I would actually do, rather do anything else. But they would meet him, and then just be sold on it, because they, like we said, the Bible, these people, the Bible would come alive. That's what he felt like, because he would do these intense studies, and people would be there for 10 to 12 hours. Like, we're not talking, like, Bible study for an hour with the kids on Sunday, we're talking, like, they would spend several days, all day, with this man fucking just screaming at them.
All right, let's take a little quick look at one of his sermons since we kind of are talking about his charisma. What was his speech level? Let's take a look. It's a pretty awesome videography, I'll tell you that much.
I mean, you know, you didn't have much to work with back then, you know?
Yeah, you did. You did, Paul. You did.
Maybe God is the one. Maybe. Not for sure. But maybe God is the one that's indicted a good matter. God speaks of the things he has made. Revelation says God is a what?
Creator.
Of? All things. And what God says God is to bring to pass. That's what prophecy is. And when Christ brings his book, that book contains what? A revelation of who?
Jesus Christ.
So, maybe God's heart's not a good matter. God speaks in that book of the things he has made concerning his?
Son.
His tongue is the pen of a?
Ready writer.
So how's God going to talk to me in the latter days?
He's gonna be ready.
And who's going to bring that book?
Wow.
So there'll be no excuses. In Psalms 40, you learn by the key of David. I waited patiently on the Lord. He inclined to me when he heard my cry. He brought me up out of a horrible pit and out of the miry clay, established my feet on a rock. Where's the rock at, class?
Heaven.
And established my goings. When Christ comes again into the world, is he going to walk in the light of his own mind or in the light of his Father's word?
Word.
He put also a new
so one thing you're so there's like quizzing and
oh,
shit
so one thing
as it goes on.
Is that David Koresh has a complete command of the Bible. Like, he doesn't, like, he has that open, but he doesn't need it open.
Yeah.
He's one of those guys that just has the Bible so down. He has his shtick so down.
He's also got complete command over that audience of people.
Oh, yeah.
Just the constant call and response, constant ongoing pop quizzing of them. You know what I mean? And most of them are getting it right every time.
Didn't you say, didn't one of you guys tell me that this shit was like 12 hours?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like these sermons of him just fucking proselytizing would go like hours and hours on end.
He called them Bible studies.
Yeah,
so
studies.
Yeah, it would be like a 12 hour day of just sitting and
listening. So you just fucking sit your ass down and then you fucking do this boring shit for 12 hours. No wonder these people's spirits were fucking broken down by this guy.
So this is kind of where you get it. Oh, we get a little more into his beliefs is that he'll talk about it at some point if we get to it, the seventh seal, but. Koresh believed he was the chosen messenger of the apocalypse, and he was tasked with unlocking the seven seals in the book of Revelations. Like, he thought he was the lamb in the book of Revelations, essentially, because that's who basically...
Maybe he was!
Yeah, what's this thought he was shit?
He thought he
it's
was.
Like you're making a fucking call on it there, Scott.
Yeah,
like,
I am making a call on it, unfortunately.
You don't think he was the seventh seal? The lamb of the seventh seal, dude?
No, he was not the lamb to to read the seven seals because, one, the seven seals don't exist, and two...
was he the living branch, though, is the real question that
was
I
was he the
want.
Living branch?
Yeah.
All right, let's see what the Bible has to say about this, Scotty.
About David Koresh?
No, about the fucking lamb and the seven seals, dude.
Oh, Revelations 5, 2?
Nope, 6, 1, or and 2, 6, 1. Stupid
I'm
fuck.
I'm sorry, T.
Memorized.
You have a fucking
no, I don't.
Screen right
no,
now
I don't.
You with it.
Nuh-uh.
Okay.
Look, I don't even need to look at it. Revelations, yeah, whatever. And I saw the lamb opened one of the seals, and I heard, as it were, the noise of thunder, one of the four beasts saying, "Come and see." And I saw, and behold, a white horse. This all happened, Scotty. If you think about Waco through a certain fucking lens of craziness, that's exactly what happened. The noise of thunder, the compound being destroyed, the four beasts, the fucking three branches of government plus the fucking military, dude. I guess the military's already a branch. But
they turn the frickin' frogs gay!
The law enforcement fucking branch. I don't know, dude.
The branch.
There's got to be some way to interpret this to make it work.
There's a million different ways.
He did it. He was the lamb. The seal is open. The fucking, we're living in the end times. The four horsemen are fucking riding among us. I believe it. I'm a fucking Branch Davidian. Fuck you heathens.
All right, well, you're stupid as fuck then.
No, I'm not. I'm banking on the right God this time, guys. So banking on the right God.
One of the things he said was about, this is about Revelations. So the question remains, what are the seven seals? And the answer remains, a revelation of Jesus Christ, which God gave him to show unto his servants things which must surely come to pass.
Neat.
So, I mean, he's basically said, I mean, to answer, kind of answer the question Paul has, I mean, he doesn't necessarily say, I am the second coming of Jesus, but he's saying he's the only, I mean, that this is going to come to pass, and he's the one to interpret it, so.
Right, so he's basically in a roundabout way saying, yep, I'm Jesus.
I mean, he's a prophet or Jesus. I mean, it's like, you know, potato, potato. It's like, he pretty much believes it.
Well, I mean, he used to use the theology to get people to do things for him in the compound, too. I remember one of the ones I looked up was he used to take this Psalms verse about the king's head being anointed with oil, and he changed it to, like, it's my dick head. I'm the king, and the head that needs to be anointed with oil is the head of my dick, and the oil is pussy juice. I shit you not. That's what he told people. And, like, people believed it so much that they were actually proud to be fucked by him because they thought they were anointing the king's head with their oil, dude.
Awesome.
Waco survivors and people that had relationships with Koresh just said as much, like, oh, yeah, we thought we were doing this for God. It wasn't like we're just banging David Koresh. It was we're doing this for, you know, our beliefs. So at some point after Koresh took over the group, which is going a little bit further, but he actually then declared that he should actually be the only male in the group allowed to have sex with any of the females in the group. Like, that was
shocking.
It. Yeah, crazy how that worked out.
He was the only heterosexual, like Jim Jones. The
men were allowed to stay, but they had to be celibate. And even masturbation, of course, was frowned upon in the group. You know, I mean,
he didn't even let them jerk off. He's like, I'm going to fuck all your women right in front of you, and you can't even spank one out.
This is like the cuck cult.
Yeah.
Cuck cult.
It's also where there's a lot of allegations of sexual abuse. I mean, it was said that he slept with, you know, girls as young as 12 years old.
Man, this is some Catholic shit, David.
When he
Koresh
first took over, I remember seeing somebody say that, like the law enforcement wanted to do something about the fact that all these, you know, rumors of him having sex with all these underage girls were going around, but they couldn't find a complainant. Like, they couldn't find anybody that was saying, like, hey, this guy's fucking my daughter, because the people in the cult were like, oh, yes.
It is an honor.
Go and anoint his dickhead with the oil of your vagina, you know? So none of them are reporting anything, so the cops were kind of hamstrung. They couldn't do anything about it.
So they knew it was happening, but there was nothing they could do because basically the entire community had decided, this is good.
Yeah, this is fine by us. Go away.
Yeah, we accept it. And like you know, it goes without saying. Well, I mean, not goes without saying, but it goes with saying that this group had been around for a while, so it wasn't like they were total outsiders. They weren't necessarily just like an insulated cult. They were known in the Waco community. It wasn't like no one knew who they were, what they were doing. It was like they're kind of just thought as eccentric. They were just weird. They were out there in the middle of nowhere, you know, Bible thumpers. You know, it's like whatever. So it wasn't like this group was totally seen as, like, they're just off their fucking rocker. It was like, yeah, they're maybe a little weird, but whatever. So basically, the power struggle that began in 1982. It was when you know, David Koresh or Vernon Howell found the Branch Davidians. He instantly kind of cozied up to the leadership, Lois Roden at the time, and then began a power struggle with her son, George, which basically kind of lasted until her death. So she dies, and George kind of takes over, but he's not very popular. He doesn't last very long in the group. And George himself is just a mentally ill, deranged guy. I mean, he was insane. I mean, the reason he was able to take over too was because George didn't pay his taxes, and that wasn't why though. He actually murdered his roommate. Yeah, there was a gun battle at the compound.
Yeah, didn't he have some weird shit where he, like, dug up a body
Yeah.
And he was like, get on down here, David Koresh, and resurrect this body.
Well, when he was losing support, he actually tried. That was a stunt he pulled. He said, I'm going to exhume a body, and I challenge David Koresh to make this body rise from the dead.
And he actually went to a graveyard and stole somebody's body up out of the grave and had it laying there in the coffin. So David Koresh, I think, called the cops on him.
Yep. He tried to have him prosecuted.
And shootout ensued because of that. So it wasn't, you know,
they went there to look for evidence.
Right.
Heavily armed.
Yeah.
So this guy, George Roden, who actually ends up fucking murdering his flatmate or roommate, because he believes David Koresh sent him to kill him, this guy was crazy. So he's out of the picture. David Koresh takes over.
He's making a lot of value judgments, you know? Stick to the facts, guy.
Okay.
I don't need to know about who you think crazy.
You know that axe you got for the Vikings thing?
Yes.
Imagine if I just hit you in the head and claimed that it was because someone had been sent to kill me. That's pretty much the equivalent.
I think that sounds reasonable.
Oh, okay, you think that sounds reasonable.
I think it sounds reasonable.
Well, that's wonderful.
It sounds potentially reasonable.
So this guy's out of the picture. They pay the back taxes, because that's a requirement actually for him to own the property. And David Koresh basically just takes charge.
That is a lot of the people, Scotty, in the chat are talking about how you're looking fat now.
Cool.
That's the main concern
right
there in the chat. Just so you know. I just like to update you guys on what's going on in the chat every now and then.
Scotty is fat.
So you know.
Scotty is fat. How about that?
TJ was so confused when they asked if he was with them. What? I don't even need to read
that. Yeah, you're dipping into the fucking void there, TJ.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. All right, so there was a lot of power struggling. This George Roden guy sounds pretty fucking nuts. When did Koresh consolidate his power?
Basically by 89. By 89, which is about 4 years before the Waco siege, everyone famously knows, that's pretty much when he kind of consolidated power. I mean, George was out of the picture. He was in a mental hospital because he was found guilty but criminally insane. Or maybe not guilty but criminally insane, rather. And that's just kind of, and what ends up happening then is they start kind of getting into buying guns. They claim legally. I'm not really sure if it was legal or not. But so they kind of get on the ATF radar.
Yeah, the ATF claimed that they were building guns that broke the Brady Bill law. Yeah. They were assembling fully automatic, like, machine guns.
Yeah, M16s, yeah.
Which, you know, is a big no-no. Under the Brady Bill.
So they
I'm kind of conflicted on this the whole armament thing, honestly.
Why?
Because it's like, we need these guns because the government's coming to get us. And then it's like, ha, they were crazy. But then the government did come to get them, so maybe they should have had the guns. I don't know.
Well, here's the thing, though. One of the main reasons why the government came to get them is because they were stockpiling a bunch of fucking guns, so they sowed their own poison.
So it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Right. Yeah. Like, let's get a bunch of guns so the government doesn't come, and then the government's like, why are these people buying a bunch of guns? Let's go break this up.
Should have just stuck to child molestation, David Koresh.
Probably so. so what ends up happening is they say the investigation started supposedly, which I don't think this is the reason, but this is the reason they claim, was a UPS driver, a package broke up, and there was a bunch of guns and gun parts, so that kind of tipped, and that tipped off the ATF as to...
Yeah.
A package broke open.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I believe that one. Yeah, oh man, I just bobbled this package, and a bunch of guns fell out of it. Whoopsie.
That's not how that happened.
The local paper wrote a bunch of stuff about David Koresh, too, at this time. So in this time period where this investigation really, you know, starts to heat up, you know, that is when... You see, I believe it was a 7-part series called "The Sinful Messiah," and it was about, and it basically just paints David Koresh, and I mean a very unflattering light, of course, because he's viewed as a cult leader, and of course they don't like that, and it draws a lot of attention, which kind of something similar happened with Jim Jones. He started getting a lot of media attention, and things don't start working out too well, and that's kind of what leads up to the Waco siege, which was a 51-day siege, in which the FBI and it was the ATF, I believe, that actually raided the compound. Now, the funny thing is that by happenstance, a journalist asked a mail carrier about where the compound was. It happened to be related to David. I think it was his brother-in-law, David Koresh. So they actually were tipped off.
Right.
And there was actually an informant in the group at the time as well. I think his name was Robert Rodriguez or something like that. So they tried to infiltrate the group. They moved across the street. I mean, no one was really convinced by that because they knew they were under investigation. And they're in the middle of nowhere, so the four guys happened to move there.
Right.
You know, across the street, you know, a crazy paranoid cult group. They're going to notice.
Right. And it's clear it was a setup from the beginning. Like, they were on the radar now, and they were just trying to find a reason to do this raid.
But
what is this video?
But basically, Koresh gets tipped off before this.
This is just called David Koresh.
I believe this is his music.
Oh, so here's some of the... All right, so we should probably talk about that real quick then. This is kind of a weird thing. We haven't done a DFF on Charles Manson, at least not yet. But he was a failed aspiring musician, became a cult leader.
Mm-hmm.
Marshall Applewhite was a failed musician who became a cult leader, and David Koresh is a failed musician who became a cult leader.
I mean, Jim Jones never really pursued music, but was musically inclined and used it.
Don't trust musicians. They're cultists.
Yeah.
That's all I can say. So is his music any good?
I think that performer types of people are more prone to like paranoia, and that's why you see these cult figures have this kind of glaring similarity in all their lives, this kind of desire to be out in front of people, either entertaining or informing or some combination of the two. I mean, you look at it like even another cult leader that we looked at, L. Ron Hubbard, kind of the same thing there, dabbled in music and movies and was a writer, wanted to be very creative, also an incredible paranoiac. So
I have a question for you guys about cults. Since we've been doing a lot of cult episodes, and I think we might do a couple more. I'm not sure.
Yep.
I want to listen to this song first. Let's just take a quick listen to what David Koresh was doing artistically. Assuming it's probably terrible.
I don't know. We'll see.
Madman in Waco. Good name. Hitler was a failed painter. That's a good point. Wow, this sucks already.
Jesus.
I love how it's mixed all to the left.
Yeah, dude, that's great. My left ear is fucking feeling this. This sounds like this could be maybe listenable if the fucking mixing was okay. It's nothing special, though.
No.
Maybe the chorus is going to be awesome, though. It's going to have a hell of a hook.
I think this is a song about David Koresh.
Yeah.
I don't think he actually sang or wrote this.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it.
But yeah, it's a song called Madman in Waco.
I thought they said that.
That okay. I mean, unless he wrote a song about sending women and children to their houses of stone. You know what I mean?
Maybe it was a very prophetic song.
How there's a madman in Waco. I don't know. Maybe.
Let's see.
I thought I did read that he wrote the song, but maybe I was mistaken.
I mean,
or maybe he wrote a song by that title, but this is someone else that played it.
New
or something.
Waco documentary, Mad. I mean, like the only thing I see of this song looks like it attributes it to him.
That's what I thought. I mean, what? I don't know.
He wrote a song about the fucking siege before the siege happened.
I don't know, dude. I mean, whatever.
It was attributed to him, but I don't know.
That's weird.
I mean, I don't see anything attributing this song to anyone else.
That's what I'm saying.
So I don't know. That's kind of a weird mystery. We'll have to...
Dude, maybe he was the real deal.
Yeah, we'll have to investigate deeper.
Dude, let's listen to some more of that song then. Let's see how prophetic it was.
Well, I don't even know if... Let me just see if I could track down
some lyrics.
Let's see if I can fucking find out if he actually authored this song. But in the meantime, while I'm looking that up, I did have a kind of a question for you guys.
What's that?
Which is, what really, in your mind, separates a cult from just any random church? Because I've known quite a few people who were members of churches that seem to every bit as rigidly control their social lives and their morals and all this other stuff.
What kind of church, though?
I mean, like, you know, also, I don't know, like a Pentecostal church or...
Well, also, it's also how they exert control. Social control is different, where it's like if you voluntarily show up at a place and you're like, okay, I'm going to do all these things because I want to be socially accepted by this group,
presumably all these people are doing it for that reason, right?
Not necessarily. Some cults are different. I mean, and cults are wildly varied. There's cults where you cannot leave. You absolutely cannot leave the compound, and there's ones like Heaven's Gate where you can leave and
come and go as you please. You know, I think it's like the strong central figure with most of the congregant's energy, time, and money being like
used to propagate that figure and prop up that figure.
Right, yeah, used in service of that figure in some way.
Yeah, he wrote the song.
Yeah.
Weird.
That's what I told you guys.
It's not a song about what happened.
No, that's what I was saying.
It's him singing.
That's fucking crazy. He's talking about sending women and children to the houses of stone and shit.
Well, he knew.
He knew. That's a pretty kick-ass guitar that dude's playing in that picture.
Well, anyway, it sucks. But, you know.
Pretty generic.
Not as bad as it could have been.
Yeah, I mean.
Better than L.
We never were able to find any of Marshall Applewhite singing.
Thank you for listening.
So, basically... There's kind of a twofold thing of why they raided. I mean, one was there was concerns about, you know, the child molestation and potential pedophilia. I mean, that was, but the main thing with the ATF was obviously was raiding. It was the firearms. It was the guns. The guns were the main thing because obviously the government's going to start worrying when there's all these op-eds about this basically this crazy guy in the fucking middle of nowhere stockpiling.
It's so weird
arms.
Because the government has just done such a fucking 180 on the whole gun issue since then.
But this is a big...
It's just like there's tons of groups that are just building up arsenals, and the government's just kind of like, better not mess with them. Don't want another Waco on our hands.
Every time they talk about this story, anywhere I've heard it, they've always mentioned this detail, how many children were killed. The government does not want children being killed by their agents. It does not matter how it happened. It does not matter if it is, in fact, not the FBI's fault. Or the ATF's fault, or whoever's in the operation. Maybe the Branch Davidians set the fires themselves.
You know, I don't know if you know.
The result's the same, is what I'm saying.
I don't know if you remember this, but our dad, who was arrested by the fucking federal government after an FBI investigation for tax evasion and mail fraud, conspiracy to commit mail fraud.
You're a scammer, too.
One of the reasons he speculated, our dad, that maybe it happened to him was because a short amount of time before that, someone, because he had a media distribution company to send out his materials, you know, someone came to him with some Waco footage that said that it showed the federal government starting the fires and definitively showed that.
Okay.
And I don't know if that actually happened, but that was something my dad talked about is like, maybe they came at me because of that. Maybe that was played some kind of factor.
You guys have no idea where these, like...
I have no... I don't...
Hide nor hair of these tapes ever?
No.
No.
Dude, what if... there's like a box with like Waco proof sitting somewhere in storage somewhere at one of you guys' places.
I mean, I seriously doubt. I don't have anything of my dad's from that time period.
No, like that.
So,
man, dude.
But I don't know. I don't know that I necessarily believe that, but I think it's at least an interesting little family story.
It definitely is a little family connection there to that event. So on
my dad did tell a few tall tales in his day, though. So
yeah, that's putting it mildly.
I would not put total stock in that.
So on February 28th is when the ATF decided to launch this raid. As I said, they were aware that this they were tipped off, so they knew that they could expect that these people weren't going to be ready for them. So their element of surprise was not there. When they did the warrant, they decided to go in force. There were 70 ATF agents at this raid. It wasn't like they went there and they're like, okay, we're going to send a couple guys to talk to these people. Or
I have a video, by the way, of the Waco survivor Gary Nosner, FBI hostage negotiator, speaks out 25 years later or whatever the fuck. I don't know. Whenever you want that, you can just tell me.
So at some point, and they're not really certain who started shooting first. It's kind of like, you know, Star Wars, who shot first?
And the Han and Greedo shit.
The Han and Greedo shit. Like, basically, when you read about Waco, there's kind of like, there's really, two versions you prominently hear. There is the government went to get in these whack jobs and they started shooting. And then there's the sympathetic, the Alex Jones type of perspective that these people were just living out here in the middle of nowhere in Waco and the fucking government just came and fucking just killed them for daring to challenge the government.
It's a video of young Alex Jones.
Oh yeah,
back before he was just a vitamin salesman.
Well, he made a documentary about Waco. I think it was like Waco or Wake Up America or something.
You're not gonna do anything to me. These people are murderers. These people are murderers. I'm sick and tired of hearing your lies when you machine gunned a bunch of men, women, and children. You got a big problem, buddy. You sit over here. I'm not afraid of you guys. I'm a law-abiding citizen, and I'm sick of it. You sit over here and you talk about how the children huddle in the corner and how the ammunition that they had is what killed them. All the rest.
I will say for Alex Jones, it is convenient to show up at Waco. I mean, he lives in Austin or something, right?
Yeah.
So it's pretty. It's not that far.
You have no calm aplomb. It's false, my friend. And let me tell you, a lot of people are writing down your names. You can follow people around. You can harass people. You can back up your bankster buddies. But a revolution of peaceful information is coming, and when it comes time, you people are going to be brought to punishment.
That's not something you hear Alex Jones talk about much anymore. A revolution of peaceful information is not really in his lexicon these days.
No. Well, now he's best buds with the Presidente, so
your jaw!
I mean, like, I kind of wonder how he's even dealing with that, because, it used to be the establishment that's doing this and the establishment's doing that. Now he's best buds with the establishment, yeah. So...
So
now he's got to talk about the deep state and all the forces working against Trump from within the government bureaucracy and all that.
Well, of course he does. I mean, Alex Jones has made his living fucking huck.
But it kind of just puts him in the position of like a Sean Hannity or something. Kind of steals his thunder.
Well, that's my thing. Is like he was co-opted a long time ago. This Alex Jones that you're seeing up here was actually a dude that had principles, believed in something, wanted to confront these government officials and shit. And then at some point he realized he could make a whole lot more money, selling bone broth, muscle milk and shit.
Oh, it tastes even better than Ovaltine. Oh God, it's so good.
MREs.
That's my deliciousness reflex.
Well, dude, Alex Jones is like the ultimate fucking huckster, dude. Like he covers it all, dude. Vampires, aliens, the end of the world. He's fucking come out. The vitamins, the water filtration. Like, he thinks of everything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he'll sell you no matter what you want to buy. It's kind of just like he does a survey. So how do you think things are? Who controls the world? Okay, vampires. Okay, and how are they going to take over? Okay, and how are they going to destroy it? Okay, you need to buy this survival pack.
Get some InfoWars garlic and hang it around your neck, brother. Ward off those vampires that you know are coming.
Oh, I think Bilderberg. Okay, this is your Jewish protection necklace.
Yeah,
I mean, like, give me a fucking break.
Yeah, oh, you've assessed me. You listen, you can sit there and say some kind of little joke. All your techs put garbage, my friend. I got people like General Parton, ex-head of Air Force Weapons Development. We know the federal government destroyed Oklahoma. It's proven. We know what you guys are engaged
proven.
In. It's like Hitler burnt the Reichstag. We know you brought Nazis over here through the rat line to set up our CIA. After
God, the fallacious reasoning of Alex Jones is just me all day. Astonishing.
I've assessed you, a smiley face slime ball that sits here and
trying to figure you out, FBI.
Damn, it's a lot of shade of Galen in this episode, dude.
How's that even shade? It just reminded me of something Galen would say.
Oh, dude, you're fucking just against Galen now, TJ.
Galen is a wonderful person.
Galen did say that if we didn't use this episode as a platform to roast Janet Reno the entire time, that he would never speak to any of us again.
Cool.
Oh, well, I guess we'll have to get to that.
So basically, in the two-hour battle, the gun battle on the first day of the raid, which, you know, I mean, was not much of a raid, seeing as the Branch Davidians expected it, four federal agents die and about six Branch Davidians were killed. And that kind of led to ensuing...
What about the... I mean, I thought there was a bunch of kids that died, like 23 kids or some shit.
That's on the first day.
You're talking about the first day, day one. Okay.
This is a 51-day event. So
right.
This is day one. This is when the ATF goes in there, they roll in as a convoy, and they try to basically break down the door, and they...
So the initial score is 6-4. Okay.
Yeah, in favor of the fucking ATF. So this goes so back. They go back and forth for a long time. If you just want to play the video now, is a good
this
time.
This one or the
well, as here. I said, I'm with the FBI, not the ATF. We're in charge of this now.
Isn't that like getting in a
yeah the day one
fight with a neighbor boy and he
and Waco's actually back in kind of the news because of the show.
Investigate.
Yeah, I didn't even realize that until I saw people in the chat talking about it.
Yeah.
I don't want to play too long of an uninterrupted clip of it because
it's not actually the show. It actually gets into.
I know. I'm just because I mean, it just the smallest clip of some shit like this sometimes will just trigger that.
Oh no,
bullshit.
I agree with you.
That was from. The
All right, so hold on. I want to just do something here. That's kind of bullshit. I mean, like, let's just fucking compare and contrast this shit for a second. I mean, you know.
Yeah,
man, you know,
where's the mullet?
And you know, I don't know.
This is not. There's no fucking mullet, dude. I'm not buying
know,
this.
Man.
Dude.
I ain't buying it. It ain't
hashtag
legit.
Where's the mullet, dude? Come on,
hashtag where's not the mullet? David Koresh.
All right, damn, this bitch is still on TV. I thought she was gone. Stalling for time by Gary Nestner, who was portrayed. You're stalling for time, trying to fucking preserve
Waco,
your fucking career.
David Thibodeau, Gary Nestner.
I can relate
now.
And this is a total aside.
Holy shit.
Yeah, this is a total aside, but I saw David Thibodeau, the guy on the left, speak when he put out his book, like, A Place Called Waco.
I would like to offer an alternative theory to what happened at Waco. This guy ate them.
Yeah. In 1999, I saw this guy. I watched him speaking, and he's way skinnier, dude. He got fucking fat. I mean, like, that chair looks like... It looks like they had to bring a special chair out.
Yeah, dude, that's like... It looks like it's a wider chair. I mean, I don't know if it's just the perspective... It could
dude,
be.
Is it?
I think it might.
Oh,
actually...
dude, it definitely is.
Oh yeah, dude. They
dude,
got
that's
it.
A wider fucking.
They
chair.
Got him an extra wide chair, dude.
Oh fuck, dude.
That guy looks like he's pushing like 400 pounds.
Dude, oh, easy
fat,
peasy.
He's fat as fuck.
He's like
David. Listen to me, David. The ATF is gonna raid any second. we have to eat the children. Just let me eat the children, okay?
You were inside the compound for those entire 51 days. You were close with David Koresh. Describe
he was
what
my
the people
buddy.
Were like and what those that time period was like.
Killed me to eat him.
Well, it was like the frosting on a Twinkie, Megyn Kelly. I'll tell you that. And nothing but positive memories of David Koresh.
If you're watching right now or whatever in the future, go fucking... Google this guy before.
I can do it. I mean,
yeah. Find an old picture of David Thibodeau so people can see.
It's astonishing, dude. I know this has nothing to do with Waco. I mean, in any real sense.
I mean, let's just say that the Lord has been bountiful, okay, in his life.
Yeah, if you're listening, yeah, the Lord has been very.
He has reaped many a bountiful harvest.
Was
at the Golden Horseshoe Corral.
Okay, let's take a look. I got some old
pictures.
This
guy hits up the Chinese buffet at least three times a week.
Easy.
Easy, dude. They have his picture up on the wall, like, do not serve.
I mean, I'm a fat fuck, so you know, jeez, man.
When Paul stands back in awe of your fatness,
yeah.
You're fucking fat.
Holy fuck, man.
I mean, hold on, let me just get Let me just blow it up.
Whoa, TJ, that's a really insensitive thing to say when we're talking
blow them up, dude.
We're talking about Waco where a bunch of people were blown away and fucking burned, TJ. Come on.
Yeah. Crispy critters. Sorry.
Have a heart.
There he is. I mean, like, kind of went from being a little... God damn, dude. I need to fucking go on a diet.
Chunky to...
That's like... The left is like you now. That's you in 20 years.
Yeah, dude. I need to fucking... That's what I'm saying.
He looks like a bullfrog.
I don't want to need an extra wide chair.
Excuse me, Miss Kelly, but do you have an extra wide chair that I could use for this interview? I guess I could squeeze myself into one of these on the set, but it's going to be a little uncomfortable. Do you still give away the complimentary biscuits and gravy? Yeah, can I hit up the catering table on my way out, Megan? Is it okay if I take some danishes home for my kids?
This dude be asking if it'd be okay if he leave some danishes, if anything.
Look, I'll leave a couple.
I left a couple danishes on the catering table there for Megan Kelly only. No crew members can have any danishes.
All right. Enough so, making fun of this chunky so pitch. This is a highbrow show. Highbrow.
Than what we had been used to.
Kind of keep them brows high.
Just ready to eat. And the water was
see, look, he went directly to the food.
We had lots of meals.
What was it like at Waco?
The one thing I remember, Megan, is that we had a whole bountiful harvest of meals ready to eat. Mashed potatoes, gravy, meatloaf. Oh, my God, it was delicious. And then there was David Koresh, and there was some weird stuff going on. But, man, the meals ready to eat, Megan. Oh, God.
Yeah, it was obviously an exciting time, but watching daily the press conferences, there would always be the FBI was in control totally of the information that the world got. Mm-hmm. And so when not able to...
So did you think that they were going to say, okay, the FBI is going to put out a press release. Let's get David Koresh on the phone and make sure there's anything he wants to put out there as well. You know, like, that's not how it works, dude. They're going to share the government's version of events. They're not going to share your version of events.
To kind of respond to things on a daily basis that people are saying about you becomes very frustrating, especially the communication breakdown between David Koresh, Steve Schneider, and the FBI negotiators.
There's Lieutenant Steve Schneider. When you see the videotapes, because they were taking videotapes inside the compound, the Davidians were, and it's these lovely people talking with their kids and holding little ones and... You know, they're calm and they seem peaceful. Of course, the story on the other side is that they weren't, that they had killed ATF agents.
The thing you always hear about this kind of shit is, and unless you're about a really wacko cult, is they're just... Like, yeah.
I mean, what are they supposed to be doing, you know?
You know, they're fucking humans.
Like, it's like you expect... I mean, like, it's like they expect them to be acting like aliens or something because they're in a cult.
I mean, I guess Heaven's Gate kind of did.
A little bit, but I mean, they were literally trying to with all their might.
Yeah,
and even then, they weren't really. I mean, that fucking entire cult just projected insecurity.
Yeah.
But whatever, we're talking about Branch Davidians today.
Which is what they claimed made the ATF interested them in the first place, Gary.
Well, you know, I wouldn't characterize them as not being some good people who were there to follow David Koresh.
Oh, I thought that was Chris Matthews for a minute. And I was like, why is Chris Matthews sitting there?
Prompted,
but it ain't.
ATF to raid the building. And then now all of a sudden we have to show up as the FBI, and I'm running the negotiations, and there's four people killed on the ATF, four, five, six Davidians, many wounded. It's a pretty difficult situation to now say, let's all be friends and chat nice.
How many did you get out?
We got 30. My negotiation team got 35 people out.
I mean, I don't think anybody expects you to be friends, but to chat is your job. Like, the fact that they killed a bunch of your dudes in the opening exchange doesn't preclude using, like, diplomacy to get them out alive when there's women and children involved.
And like you said, it's about to actually get to that, but he was really in favor of a diplomatic approach, and... Like, as Galen said to you, Janet Reno was ultimately the one that made the decision. Because even Bill Clinton, who was being advised about this, obviously, because it's a big national news story, he left it in Reno's hands. I think Clinton was kind of like, why don't you handle that one up?
Yeah.
You're the head of law enforcement for the federal government. You go ahead and handle
it. And Janet Reno said, just basically, fuck diplomacy, we're going in.
Well, at a certain point, because there was two kind of schools of thought. Why don't you play a little bit, and it'll kind of explain the FBI's approach to this a little bit better.
All right.
Over the first half of the 51-day season.
He got a bunch of kids out. So good job on that.
Because you had a difference of opinion on how it should go?
Yeah, I mean, in addition to the conflict inside the compound, as David Thibodeau here just referred, there was conflict within the FBI. There was the negotiation team that wanted to basically engage in dialogue and convince them to come out to share with the world what they thought about things. And there was a part of the FBI that wanted to force them out, to tighten the noose, as it were, to exert increasing amounts of pressure. And those two things were in contrast and contradiction and created a lot of problems for us.
And it did not go the way you wanted it to.
Not at all.
Not another hostage came out after Gary was removed.
They weren't really hostages, though, I have to tell you that.
They weren't. They were followers.
They wanted to be there, yeah.
They wanted to be there. So, and you wanted to be there.
You can't really make that decision, right?
No.
You can't deny that they were using those children as...
a bargaining chip.
Hostages, sure. Basically. I mean, honestly, you got a bunch of kids. They're not like, yes, I want to devote my life to anointing the head of David Koresh's penis with oil.
I don't know if that really... I mean, that doesn't really track completely for me. Because it's like, if your neighborhood is suddenly under siege by an invading force, you know, you wanting to keep your kids is not a hostage situation.
Right. I'm not saying wanting to keep their kids, but your neighborhood would also have to be stockpiling tons of illegal weapons.
I mean, maybe it is, but it's still, you know, it's still your community, whatever, if you're that involved.
But don't they kind of become hostages in a siege like that, where it's like, hey, you got to turn over these weapons?
Also, I wouldn't kind of...
hostages to the United States government, maybe.
Yeah, I wouldn't categorize your own government as an invading force.
I mean, obviously these people would.
To some extent, sure, but I do agree to a certain extent. Obviously, most of the adults wanted to be there. I mean, it wasn't like they were forced to be there. But the children, you can't really say. But what is the?
I mean, that's the power of religion, though, isn't it? I mean, they think this is the path God wants us on.
Well, what comprehension do children have, anyways? I mean, they
none. But I mean, that's what I'm saying. Is like any kid raised in any religion doesn't have much of a fucking choice.
I mean, either they're going to go along with it, or if they disagree, they know they have no choice anyway, so they're going to go along with it.
I'm trying to find a good insulting picture of Janet Reno like burning in hell or something, but it doesn't seem like I can find one.
Nobody really cares anymore.
Sorry, Galen. I mean, she died, and it was kind of just like...
Yeah, people really did hate Janet Reno back in the day, but nobody really even invokes her name anymore.
No.
I mean, it was kind of like... I remember she got hated for Waco, and then she got hated for the Elian Gonzalez thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then
both of which I think she mishandled horribly.
Well, yeah. She totally deserves the hate.
I mean, like, if she really did give the order to, like, storm the Waco compound, then the blood of all those children is on her hands.
I mean, it should've...
The Elian Gonzalez story ended up horribly, shipping a little child back to abject poverty. It just retarded.
Yeah. I mean, it...
She's a cunt.
It really
she
doesn't
was.
Make any sense.
I'm not one of these Trump supporters, but I do think it's funny that she said, Trump will never be president in my lifetime, and then she died like a week before he got elected.
Well, she was technically right.
Yeah, she wasn't lying. There's that famous picture. You remember the Elion picture of the...
The
dude's raiding, like, he's in the closet and they've got fucking guns pointed at him and shit. And it's like, what are you even doing? She definitely had this kind of hard-charging approach to what she
it
thought
seemed
law
like,
enforcement's role was.
I don't know. I think it's because she was like... I mean...
She was a woman, right, in a position where she wanted to show strength. And she's like, I'm going to show them that a woman can...
Ostensibly a woman, yeah, so...
Oh, come on, TJ.
I mean, she was played on SNL by Will Ferrell for a reason,
yeah,
man.
That's true.
You know, she was a pretty manly broad. Where's that fucking famous Elian Gonzalez photo so I could put that up? Now, I do want to say, this guy in the photo, this is kind of unrelated, but I guess it is related because of Janet Reno and shit. But, you notice his finger's not on the trigger. I mean, he does have good trigger discipline there. It's not like he could accidentally blow them away or something.
I don't think
that
they really thought they were going to resist by force.
Right. So, I mean, you know.
It was just...
It didn't seem like they were going in guns blazing for the kid or some shit. But,
yeah,
I mean,
why do you need assault rifles, though, to go get a kid?
You don't. And I mean, it kind of just goes towards, you know, she's like overcompensating. It's like she wants a dick and some balls, so she's got to act like she thinks People with Dicks and Balls Act, but you know, in reality, most people would try to resolve that shit,
you know,
with diplomacy.
At that point, after 51 days, Jan Arino basically gives the order:
go in.
So they start basically spraying tear gas into the complex. So they have these vehicles they have in there, and they're just pumping tear gas into the building.
That's fantastic! What a great thing to do.
Yeah,
they're actually ramming the building too. Is that they're punching holes in walls?
Save the children! Gas the children! Like
they
what?
Actually, from my information, they deposited 400 tear gas canisters inside the compound.
Jesus.
And so, basically, about 25 minutes later, the Branch Davidian set several fires, according to this. So, one thing that came out in the investigation after the building, after the fire and everything, because Janet Reno actually had to appoint a special investigator because there was such a public outcry about the deaths of the children. And the building burning down, and obviously a lot of people believe the government burned the building down because they wanted to get them out of there. Some people believe the Branch Davidians burned the building down as a way just to die and commit mass suicide. Because that was always a big concern, too, with the Branch Davidians during the whole negotiation was they would commit mass suicide.
Right, they're an apocalyptic cult, so right. We have precedent for that.
And, you know, the Jonestown thing is not that distant of a memory, you know.
So, basically, it says, at 12:25, gunfire was heard inside the compound, but due to safety concerns, so the building is ostensibly on fire. They're hearing gunshots in the building. The firefighters were not allowed to come in for 15 minutes, so the building's basically burned down before they're like, yeah, you can go in there.
Right.
So, there's a lot of questions that are obviously raised. I mean, one, how did the building catch fire? It was found that some of the tear gas canisters were flammable.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I'd heard that, like, they did use so many of those fucking things. And there's, like, a little incendiary component when they go off, right, to ignite whatever's in there that releases the gas and shit. And they're throwing 400 of those things into this compound. It's not shocking to think that a couple of them are going to land on a sheet or a curtain and start a big-ass fire in some part of the compound where nobody is because it's exposed to gunfire.
Well, that's the fucking million-dollar question, really, is who started the fire? Because the fire is obviously what ended the siege.
All I know is we didn't start the fire.
Whoa, TJ.
I don't know. I can't. I couldn't not do it. I'm sorry.
So, of the people remaining, only 9 people managed to escape the compound at that point. Once the fires and the gunfire and everything went down.
Did they just run out?
Yeah, they ran out.
What was the total death toll?
Hands up and shit.
I believe they said they found 75 bodies. I've heard 75, 76. I'm not sure.
How many children?
25 belonged to children.
So wow. Children so died. 75 bodies.
But at least they didn't grow up in a cult.
A number of the deceased had been fatally shot, including Koresh, which some of the wounds appeared to be self-inflicted, others did not. So it might have been like the end's coming. Fire.
I was watching some of these documentaries from some of the people that were there during the raid, and some of the ATF agents were saying there was literally nowhere, like during the raid, there was nowhere that they could go that bullets weren't whizzing by their heads. I mean, there was so much ammunition being pumped into the building and coming out of the building that these guys didn't know which way they could go because fire was coming from both sides.
I mean, it basically just became a total clusterfuck at that point.
I mean, and there's footage too, some really famous footage of one of those ATF agents during this raid that
we've
talking
got a
about.
Little bit of footage of something. I don't know if it's of that, but
there's one where he's climbing up he's climbing up the ladder to the windowsill and a bunch of bullets are just coming out of the building through the wall and he ends up getting shot. I mean, it was just total insanity.
This is a CNN video of the building, the compound catching fire.
Sure.
And as you can see, the fire is, I mean, the smoke is just billowing out, so that means fire.
Right, on the inside there, it's spreading rapidly and it's just...
Yes, let's do it. Let's do it.
Let's do it. Let's do it! I agree. Let's do it. I mean, like, how much food and stuff did these people have in there? Like, wouldn't they have eventually...
Oh, let me tell you, TJ, we had a cornucopia.
Oh, okay.
I believe that they said they had about a year supply of food.
So, I mean, like, I don't know. It seems like you could have just waited them out.
I mean, is that more humane, though, to starve children?
I mean, I don't know. It seems like maybe you... I mean, like, obviously, while it's going on, you can try to be talking them down and shit.
For the last 15 minutes, we've watched this M60 vehicle, this combat engineering vehicle, make large holes in the side of this building and pump tear gas in there. At times, as you well know, tear gas can be incendiary, and apparently this is what's happened. And it looks like now we have a breaking out on what
I mean,
south side,
of course,
right near the front side of this
fire building. Tends to do that.
I mean, it's of course possible they started the fire, but broken out. I mean, it seems more likely that it was probably one of the fucking tear gas rounds.
As I said,
now, of course, the government has never taken responsibility, and there was an investigation done that cleared them of any wrongdoing.
But, who conducted it?
I think it was a former congressman.
Yeah, so it was the government investigated itself and found itself innocent. All right, cool.
Pretty much.
Rock on.
The implications from this event, even just more so than the people dying and everything, was 2 years later, a guy named Timothy McVeigh decided to blow up a building and decided this, and it was actually on the second anniversary of this event.
The government did that, Scotty. Oh. It was not Timothy McVeigh. He was a patsy. He was a pawn. It was the government that blew that up. No man can just load up a bunch of fertilizer in the back of his truck.
Impossible.
Blow the face off a building without help.
Impossible.
Come on, Scotty. Wake up.
Wake up.
Waco or wake up.
Waco or wake up.
I'm trying to wake up, Paul. I'm trying, dude.
Timothy McVeigh. Yeah. How many people did he kill? It was like fucking
168.
Yeah, crazy.
And a bunch of kids, too.
Yep. Kids. I mean,
there's a whole daycare center in the front of that building that just got completely blown to pieces.
Retribution for this.
That was part of it, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said towards the beginning of the show, it's just like I feel like the government handles situations like this a lot differently now. Kind of like, you know, when they had the Cliven Bundy thing. You know, there was some tension with this armed militia, and the government just kind of said, you know what?
Didn't, though. They were building up a bunch of fucking troops and shit around there. Like,
they were ready. Off. They were ready if shit was going to go down. But
yeah, I mean, if one of those fucking shit heels had let off a round accidentally or something, it could have, you know what I mean? And we haven't even talked about Ruby Ridge, which is another kind of very similar incident in our past where. You know, I think that was over some, like, tax or land dispute or some shit. But another compound out in the middle of nowhere that was raided by the government and ended up killing everybody inside. Big shootout and shit. So, yeah, I think there's enough of these that have happened in more recent memory that the government is way, way more careful how it approaches things these days.
Yeah, I mean, because it's just way too much of a headache to deal the fallout and repercussions of something like this, because it just undermines their authority.
Well, yeah, I mean, diplomacy as well. I mean, the fact that this guy was able to get so many people out of the building alive.
Yeah, I mean, like,
that's how the diplomacy. I mean, look, these people were cut off. I mean, yeah, they had food, but that was going to run out.
It's just impatience.
Yeah.
Really, it is. And that's why with Cliven Bundy, you know, over the cattle grazing thing, yeah, what he did was wrong. But at the same time, it's like, do we want a massive loss of life when a bunch of right-wing militia people are showing up and are itching for the government to attack them? You know, it's like, unless they're actually killing U.S. citizens or doing something, like, really egregious that really warrants that level of force, it's probably best just let them kind of trickle off, which a lot of them did. And guess what? Then they arrested him later.
I mean, like, I feel like, you know, if you would have let negotiations continue, the guy had already fucking gotten them to release a bunch of people. He probably could have fucking talked them all out of there eventually, or at least fucking a lot more of them.
Or, like you
given
said,
more time.
Like, pushed them to the point where their food supplies were getting pretty low and they had to start really making concessions because they didn't want to starve in there. Like, there were definitely options on the table other than, you know, throw a bunch of tear gas.
They
in the
weren't.
Place,
I mean, yeah, they weren't
fire.
Going anywhere. You know,
where the fuck they're gonna go?
So,
I mean, maybe it got to the point where the government's looking at it like the whole world is watching what we're doing, and people are seeing that it's taken us so long to resolve this. We got to act. But you know, when the result is we burned down the building and killed all the fucking children. I mean, it's not. You know,
well, let's be honest.
It's not the fucking result. I mean, that's not a good. That's not great PR.
You have a heavily armed group. You have a heavily fortified group. I mean, what are you going to do? They already tried the raid approach. They already tried. Let's send fucking guys. Let's send these agents in, and they probably looked at the projections, like how many of our guys are going to die.
Yeah.
You know, so they just said, let's fucking smoke them out. Basically, let's put a bunch of shit in here, and probably what happened is it caused the fucking fire. And they all fucking started off on themselves and shit because they're part of a fucking cult. And of course the government's going to say ultimately, oh, well, it wasn't our fault. But you're the one that really pushed the situation to that point. I mean, yeah, I agree. If you're breaking the law, obviously these guys aren't above the fucking law.
Right. I mean, like,
why not let David Koresh leave his compound and then arrest him?
Yeah. I mean, like, yeah, just surround it or whatever and wait him out, or walk away and wait for him to leave the compound and arrest him in a clandestine manner. You know what I mean? There's all kinds of different options that were on the table for how this could have been resolved. And the sad thing is like the government was probably in the right to bust this up. In addition to fucking, you know, collecting all these weapons, which were illegal at the time, that's still illegal to my knowledge. You know, all these allegations of child molestation going on inside the cult. I mean, that's a consideration. You can't allow that to go on American soil. We have laws against that for a fucking reason. But they end up coming out looking like the bad guys.
If the solution to that is burning the children to death,
that's the thing.
I mean, that's not.
They find the way.
You ain't helping them at that point.
They find the way to make David Koresh and his crazy cult of people that, you know, like, you know, were fine with him molesting children and stockpiling guns to look like the victims by burning them all to death. And it's just like, how did you fuck that up? Like, if you would have brought this to any kind of peaceful resolution, it would have been like a fucking star on your chest, dude.
Was Waco actually a cult, though? Someone wants to know. I mean, what I'm trying to figure out. I'm trying to piece together...
People in the group obviously believed that David Koresh was the Lamb. They believed he was a living prophet.
Sure.
I would say probably that is considered a cult.
So, I mean, like, is it a cult when the pastor claims some sort of divinity?
I think it's there's not one identifier and there's not one clear definition of cult. We could sit here all night and argue back and forth. This is actually something that people that are in cults, including like Scientology that we've talked about, will use this kind of argument because there really isn't a clear definition of when does a religion become a cult. You know, Scientology is a recognized religion in the United States. So does that mean it's not a cult? Even though it treats people like shit, you know, human trafficking and human rights abuses and, you know, all this crazy fucking fundraising that they do. Yeah, but it's not a cult because it's, you know, so there's this blurry line.
I feel more inclined to just go the opposite direction and say, like, aren't all these religions basically just cults?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, isn't every religion a cult?
It's the level of acceptance.
If you got a fucking society of 100 people and fucking 80 of them believe in something, then it's a religion. If 10 do, it's a cult.
Well, here's the big difference, though. Let's say with Christianity, for example, that's the predominant religion in America. You know, when you look at that, there's a lot of people who are Christians who are Christian in name only because it's most people are Christians. I'm a Christian. So when you hear shit like America's 95% Christian. Yeah, but how many of those are devoted Christians? Probably not that many.
All right, a lot of lapsed Christians.
A lot of lazy Christians. So with a mainstream religion, it's a lot easier to say I'm part of a religious group or whatever and not really be involved. Whereas in these groups, everyone is heavily involved in the belief.
I mean, cults didn't used to have a negative connotation back in the polytheistic days.
No.
The cult of Dionysus was just another, you know, little kind of religious subsect and stuff. And I think that really, you know, if I was going to try and tell somebody what I thought a cult was, there's a lot of factors that go into it. It's got to have a charismatic central figure that consolidates all power onto him. In my mind, there has to be some sort of violence or threat of violence, either against themselves or against others. You know, there has to be some kind of sense of separation from the outside world. You know, the idea of removing themselves from society and living on a compound so they can get away with whatever they want. That seems to typify what I think of as a cult. There's probably a bunch more, but I don't think we're going to get that definitive answer that we want because there just isn't one. What's a cult? How does it differ from modern religion? I don't know.
A lot of people are saying that Scotty's mic is having some issues. Can you do a little test for me?
He might be just a little far away from it.
How about now?
Yeah, it's probably better.
Do a little test.
Testicles.
Like loud.
Ah!
Whoa. Okay, shit. All right.
You said loud, motherfucker.
I just meant like test, 1, 2, 3 or whatever.
What do you think of a cult as, TJ? Like, what is it? To you, like, what do you?
I mean, I don't know. I think of all these small town churches where, you know, everybody gathers together and it's all, you know, everyone's judged through the church and the church sets the standard and all this stuff. And it does institute a lot of control over people's lives. Sure. And I'm just like, how is that really so different than these Branch Davidians and stuff? I mean, I guess maybe it's different in that they're not all living at the church and, you know, saying that only the pastor can fuck the women.
I would say it's also your societal acceptance. You know, a lot of no one really questions if you're Catholic. I mean, and I get it what you're saying. Yeah, but if you're Catholic, there's all these ceremonies and weird things. And if it wasn't a mainstream religion, if 30 people were Catholic, we would say they're a cult. We would say they're weird.
I mean, fuck are these weirdos?
So I get where you're coming from. I think societal acceptance is a big role in it, too, because if a society or culture at large accepts something, it's not viewed as weird. It's viewed as normal.
Right. I mean, I think people start calling it a cult when it has pernicious intent. It's like, you know, like if you look at a modern religion that's widespread, what's mostly going on there, while you might argue that it's destructive, sure. It's widely accepted in society, and there's a lot of charitable stuff going on, and, you know, they're registered with the government and stuff. Cults tend to kind of be off of that radar, smaller, more localized, and, you know, often with this apocalyptic message. But yeah, there's no clean way to tell people what a cult is.
All right. Well, I think it's an interesting discussion, maybe a discussion for another time. So that's pretty much, I mean, that's obviously there's way more you could get into when it comes to the Branch Davidians
When it came to David Koresh and Waco and the Branch Davidians, like, I'm telling you guys, there's probably podcasts and TV shows and stuff. If you want to get way more in depth, you definitely can.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
We have just scratched the surface. And I've seen people say that kind of about our stuff, and that's kind of what we really see this as, more of a springboard. You know, we're not going to ever be the show that does 17 parts on Waco.
Yeah, someone sent me like a 5-hour podcast on Heaven's Gate, and they're like, this podcast really got into it. It's like, good for them.
That's awesome. Yeah.
I'm glad they did that. That's not really what we're doing. But
actually, I saw someone say about our Scientology thing, L. Ron Hubbard. They said, hey, I got really more into it. And that's kind of what we're hoping for with these episodes, that you guys go and find other stuff like this too.
There were a lot of comments on the Jim Jones episode, people that just had never even heard of it.
Yeah.
Didn't even know about Jonestown, and it was like shocking to them to learn about it, and they went and learned more. So that's kind of what we're doing.
Yeah, cults are crazy, and you know, I think we're covering a couple more cult leaders and stuff like that, but you'll have to stay tuned to see which ones.
Yeah, not sure what we're doing next, but our next episode will be Friday. It's for patrons only.
Oh, we know though, TJ, but they don't know.
Yeah. Yes.
Next episode will be Friday, patrons only.
You want to become a patron?
Become a patron.
Links down below. If you don't, then just steal it or whatever. Fuck you.
Yeah. Yeah, if you don't become a patron, we'll see you Monday. And if you do, we'll see you Friday and Monday.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
See you guys.